And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Dougie Poole. And Dougie, or Doug, and we'll address that in a bit, it was my co-worker Jessica Greenwell who'd been listening to a lot of Americana, alt country, and the like. She came across your name and then went down the rabbit hole of exploration and shared it with me. And I instantly became a big fan. So thanks for making the time for this.
I appreciate you reaching out. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. Let me just go into it this way then. Depending on what bio or article a person is reading, we have you hailing from either Maine or New York, Brooklyn, I think. But aren't you actually on the West Coast now? Did you finally make it?
Yeah. I moved out to L.A. just with a couple of my suitcases. I still have a storage unit back in Hackensack. I grew up in New York. I was living in Maine for about a year, and then I kind of left and went on tour for a long time, just had my stuff in storage, and then, yeah, I finally settled out here in January.
Before we really get going, music from another band. And this is a band and song that you mentioned in the NPR series, The Song That Changed My Life. The song is called Black Country, and the band, I won't even try to pronounce it, but the thrust of this, though, is what was it about this group or song which affected you, what it did for you?
You know, it was the first time that I had met people my age who were making their own music, you know, people who were true artists. They didn't think about it as demos or something on the way to something else. They made their own songs, and they existed in the form that they existed in, and that was their art. You know, I think until that point, I had only conceived of making a recording as something you could do if you had a big budget or the clouds parted and somebody came down and handed you a record deal for whatever reason. You know, I didn't really understand a path to becoming a musician or a songwriter or somebody who makes their own music until then. And it took a while for it to sort of bubble up in me and make me start to write my own music and make my own recordings and stuff. But I think that was the first song that I heard, something that a friend of mine had made that really, really moved me.
Had you been playing before this? I mean, in other words, was this the reason to pick up a guitar or keyboard or whatever? Or was this something which changed the way you looked at things?
It's much more something that changed the way I looked at things. Let's see, my parents had me on piano lessons when I was a really little kid, probably starting around six, I would say. But I hated it. I didn't like to practice. Although I would kind of like sit and tinker. You know, I was learning classical music and boring little tunes that they teach to kids to get them to learn how to read music. I wasn't listening to a ton of music then, so it didn't make sense to me to play music. I didn't know what kind of music I would want to play. I just knew that the classical music I was playing didn't really mean all that much to me. So I didn't really practice it. Probably around fifth grade. You know, it's kind of funny. I had this, you know, old rockers always talk about, you know, seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan show. You know, how it was this sort of like big bang for them. Yeah. I saw the Beatles on a commercial for a CD called Beatles One, like an infomercial. They were selling it. And that, you know, it was like their 40 years later greatest hit CD. And that was sort of my Beatles on Ed Sullivan moment, I guess. I saw that infomercial, and then at some point I asked my parents for a bass guitar so I could play bass guitar like Paul McCartney. And then, you know, from there I started playing guitar. I found my way back to piano. You know, Napster came out around that time. I was downloading some music that I had never heard before. I guess that was a long-winded answer.
Oh, no, this is a long-format interview, so I will record when you speak. I appreciate the long-winded answers, actually.
No, I'd been playing music for a long time before, and, you know, I'd thought of writing songs, and I'd made, like, little ditties and riffs and stuff like that, but never really taking the time to think about how to record it or how to, you know, kind of flesh an idea out into a larger composition, which I guess is something that I still struggle with.
Then we got Black Country, and that kind of let you know that it didn't have to be perfectly polished and something that was a, quote, studio type of thing before making it okay for people to hear. That is really, really cool. Well, since your music often has a fair amount of processing, or maybe at times is over the top, filled with effects and filters, what were some of your early live gigs? This was college age for you, I think I read, so may I presume that you got some time playing at the local frat parties, or did you go straight to the bars and clubs?
So when I was in college, I had a band with two other musician friends who are also still dear friends of mine. I think we started the band by playing a Halloween cover show, and we dressed up as the Ramones and played as the Ramones.
Excellent.
They took me into their band, and we did some house parties at school, but, you know, we did clubs, and that's where I learned how to tour. We would book our own tours and toured around the country a few times and up and down the East Coast. So that was how I learned to play shows and tour and book shows and stuff like that, was with this band. We were called Cool World. And actually, that's how I learned to record, too. Before I joined the band, they recorded their first record just straight into a, you know, probably an old MacBook, not even through an interface or anything, just like straight right blasting into the MacBook microphone.
Cool.
Later on, after school, when I moved back to New York, I had some of those connections that I had made through playing music with that band, but then our band had broken up, so then I started kind of working on music on my own.
Is this when you transitioned from Doug to Dougie?
Yeah, I had read Johnny Cash's biography and noticed how everybody in his life called him John, but even though he was marketed as Johnny, I think.
Oh, exactly. You know? Yeah, Anthony Hopkins, same way. You spend time around him, he's just Tony. Cool thing about Dougie is that you hear it on the street. You know somewhere in the crowd it's either a fan or a childhood friend, somebody that knew you when you were four, and Dougie was still there. Moving on to some of your music, starting off with your debut EP, Onlyville System Special. This was in 2016. Now, the song itself, it has a feel at first of something that you might get from the Sons of the Pioneers or Roy Rogers or something like this, this loping along on a lazy horse, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweeds kind of thing. This is the feel. But then the lyrics come in and talk about driving. And if a person looks up Onlyville Special, you'll find the Onlyville New York System restaurant in Providence, Rhode Island. This has got to be an actual experience, you traveling along, getting seduced by the neon.
God, I haven't thought about that song in a long time. That restaurant, they're known for their hot dogs.
Well, they specify wieners, as a matter of fact, not hot dogs.
Wieners,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, they're known for their wieners. They're kind of open later than most of the other restaurants around. You know, we had a studio, and if you stayed at the studio really late, the only place that would be left open in the morning is this kind of odd and really nice hot dog or wiener restaurant. You know, where you can go and get a hot dog or wiener and fries. And they serve a thing called coffee milk, which is a Rhode Island specialty. Yeah, I don't know. I just went there for a gut-busting meal in the middle of many, many nights.
Gotcha. Well, it really paints a picture of somebody being road-weary and just it's the neon that draws them in. And the only reason I even specified between the wiener versus hot dog thing is I ended up reading reviews of the restaurant, and somebody emphatically states that it is the two wiener special, which you even say in the song. That's just incredible. That's really cool. And the nice thing about this is going to be one of those songs that somebody says, I was there. Oh, my God. It was 3 a.m. and I'd had enough Denny's or, you know, whatever the case is. Well,
right.
Is this the kind of thing, I know you haven't thought about it in a long time, but this could still be a good example of your type of writing. you know, writing on reflection of experience, or are you the type of person, you know, carrying a notepad with you or something like that, writing down your surroundings, of course, later on shaped into lyrics?
I'll take it whatever way I can get it, basically. Mm-hmm. I think often I'll write from experience. You know, these days I try to be a little bit more free-flowing about it. You know, that really was the first 10, 15 songs I ever wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't have one way that I do it. Like I said, I'll take it however it's delivered to me. I'm not picky about it.
That makes perfect sense to me. So, yeah, sometimes it's that voice memo number 1268.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it springs from your forehead fully formed, and sometimes it's like I keep having to come back to it and rewriting it and all that.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Dougie Poole, with an appearance in our region quite soon. More at DougiePoole.com. And to continue, going back to the album, Wide Ass Highway. On that same EP, we have Tripping with the One You Love. And now this one also made it to your full-length release, Wide Ass Highway. Now, did any of the others land on a full-length album anywhere beyond Tripping with the One You Love?
No, they didn't. And in fact, I recorded that EP after I recorded the full-length record. I put that first record, Wide Ass Highway, out with a very dear friend of mine who was a show promoter in New York. He said you can throw together an EP before the record comes out. It'll be a nice promotional thing when we ramp up to putting out the record. We were just going to drop the whole album at once, you know, maybe with a video or something out in front of it. And then, you know, he recommended that we do an EP. So I did an EP.
Okay, so it became a promotional thing, but it was really after the fact. It wasn't something leading up to the full length.
Exactly.
Okay. There's a spot in the song itself, Tripping with the One You Love, quote, every little feeling that you're feeling is half as real and twice as real. Okay, that's a spot on description of what a person may go through, I've read. But what I really appreciate, it's not quite alliteration, but enough repetition to make you want to really analyze that statement. Do you find yourself writing, let's call it the equivalent of a sketch of an idea for a lyric, and then you come back and look for that, whether it's alliteration or whether it's putting in that repeated use of a word but changing the form and really sinking it in for a person listening? It really catches a person's ear when they hear that.
There's sometimes where I like think really hard about the meaning or the sort of like puzzle of putting a song together. That line doesn't stick out to me in my memory as one of those lines that I had to really work for.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones that struck me harder. Interesting, nice. This could easily...
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like a puzzle, you know, like trying to force words into meter, and I don't really know how it works. You know, I forget who said it, but somebody said that country music is sort of like children's poetry for adults. They rhyme, and they're structured to it, and, you know, I think a lot about how when I'm just riffing by myself, a lot of times it'll fall into these goofy rhymes, and I spent a lot of time with my parents, Joel Silverstein, and my parents, for whatever reason, really liked Ogden Nash, you know, the kind of great limerick writer. He's really square rhyme schemes, so I think that rubbed off on me a little bit.
That's really cool anyway, and it may easily just come down to, once again, you take it however it comes. Sometimes it's formulaic, and sometimes it just happens, and oh my God, write it down quick before I wreck the car or something.
Right.
Does it sound easy, jumping along? since Tripping with the One You Love made it to White Ass Highway, and you said that this one ended up coming out and then you released the EP for it. Please talk about the building of this song. We have included backward playback, then there's a lead over that, and then finally the additional texture of your voice coming in. Do you recall Inception and the process of that one coming together?
Oh, gosh. Most of that record, I think I kind of built it up piecemeal in Ableton, you know, probably around 2016 when I was learning how to do home recording, or maybe a year before or something like that. These days, I'll sit down and write the whole thing on a guitar or on a piano, or I'll kind of build it up on a tape machine. I've been using a tape machine lately. But back then, you know, I would just kind of do a lot of copy and pasting on this cracked Ableton thing that I have, recording little bits at a time. And I think that one probably just started as some kind of reverse guitar or organ or something there, some kind of loop, that I just sort of built it one track at a time. None of that record, with the exception of a couple samples, I played every instrument and sang every voice on that record. You know, that was a bedroom recording.
Way cool. I was trying to decide if the backward track on this, if this was... Jimi Hendrix did this for... It was something which had to be realized forward to know what it would be backward. Or was this just really, oh, you played it backwards? It was like, okay, hey, this is cool. I'm going to write over that.
Flipping something backward used to be a whole to-do. You know, you'd have to record it forward in the tape machine and then flip around the tape or have the tape machine run backward. Yeah. But on Ableton, you click a button and everything that you recorded is backwards. It's a very easy-to-use device. Computers make that really easy. So I'm not sure. You know, okay. I think I might have been playing with a thing called Preverb, which is, you know, when you record something, flip it around backwards, and then you run it through a reverb, right? So the reverb's coming in at the end of the backwards phrases, then you flip it back forward, so you get a little bit of a tail of reverb leading up into every word. I'm not sure if that's what's happening on that tune.
Still a cool effect that maybe explains I Buried Paul.
Right.
Finally. Going back to the opening track on White Ass Highway, Don't You Think I'm Funny Anymore? This one really just eases us into the album with the synth slowly fading in, drum coming in slowly after that, or you hitting the drum track program on that. Did you write this one to be the opener, or was this one after the fact? You know, you're examining this pile of songs and only then thinking about track sequencing.
I think sequencing is usually something that pretty much later in the mix.
Okay. Port Authority hymn. This one is such the perfect one to end with as it talks, okay, on the surface about leaving everything behind, maybe even meeting your loved ones in the great beyond. That's how I took it, okay? Then I spat out my coffee, Doug, when we got to Will I Know Which Bus Is Mine, Lord? Will I Know Which Bus Is Mine? And I just suddenly went to confusion in the terminal. This, by chance, come from something you're typically muttering under your breath when you're approaching the marquee at Port Authority bus terminal?
I think I knew the metaphor of that one when I was writing it. Sometimes the metaphor reveals itself to you after you write a line or something. And that one, I think I knew ahead of time what I was writing.
Again, it took me by surprise, and I found it funny. But then I went back and I listened, and I'm trying to find, wait, was I supposed to hear something else in this point?
Will I know which bus is mine, Lord? Will I know which bus is mine? Without you there as my guide, Lord, will I find this bus sometime? I've got no ticket, I can't leave.
I was a Buddhist for a couple days. Got Tenerana, but I couldn't stay. Went to a church and prayed for mercy divine to save my sorry behind. They just turned my head and cheeks away. So since you've been gone, kinda lost my way. Now here I am, a red-blooded American cliche. I was a Buddhist for a couple days.
The Freelancer's Blues. This was your second full-length. I'm looking at on Buddhist for a couple of days. If this would be something on the surface, it'd be too easy to read into it. This is what you were doing, considering this, considering that, some sort of personal spiritual journey, which I'm not trying to pry on that, but rather just addressing the fact that in songwriting, some people will actually write about their own experience, a real experience. Other times it's more the idea of what many people go through.
That was my experience throughout my life. I guess I have these moments where I feel very deeply in touch with my spirituality. And then for long periods of time, that very deep sense of connectedness will leave me. Sometimes I notice it's gone, and more often than not, I don't even know it's gone, really, until it comes back to you. I think maybe I was writing about that from a place of, you know, having felt that sense of connectedness to spiritual power, but not being able to access it again. I think that's what I was writing about.
Gotcha. Really cool. On this edition of KVC Arts, we've been hearing from Dougie Poole and bouncing around between several releases. More at DougiePoole.com. Dougie, D-O-U-G-I-E, and Poole, P-O-O-L-E. DougiePoole.com. And again, a reminder of a performance in the region quite soon in Los Angeles. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Dougie Poole, with more from him on a near future KVC Arts. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Jessica Greenwell, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and, of course, for your support. Give any time of the year at kvcrnews.org/support or call 877-512-8843. And thanks again.